I hadn't prepared anything to say again. God damn it, I keep doing this.
You just had to practice pronouncing my name. Or maybe just try spelling.
And on that note. Hello and welcome back to Let's Grow Girls, your weekly dose of flowers.
Hello, Sarah. We're back this week with our first Irish guest, I believe.
Woohoo!
A new accent for our listeners to hear this week. And we are joined by the Irish flower farmer. And I'm pausing before I pronounce your name to make sure I say it right again. It's Fionnuala Fallon.
Excellent. Very good.
Thank you. I got top marks in our little preamble there. Did my homework. Fionnuala is a garden writer for the Irish Times and also a flower farmer, florist and author. Mm. That's quite a mouthful of F's there, Fionnuala.
It is.
It's almost like a tongue twister. Welcome to the podcast. Oh,
thank you. Thank you for asking me to come aboard. Thank you.
Very excited to have you. Irish accents are my absolute favourite. So it's lovely to talk to you.
Well, I actually not conscious of having an Irish accent. It's funny. It's only when you go abroad and people go, oh, I love that brogue. And you're going, brogue? I didn't think I had a brogue. Yeah.
When I was about 21, I had a boyfriend from Dublin, and I must tell you that the accent was a big draw to that relationship.
I can see that. Yeah, very seductive.
Yes. So, Fionnuala, let's start by finding out a little bit more from you about what your space is like there in over in Ireland. Whereabouts are you and what kind of situation are you growing on?
Okay, so you got me at a very kind of interesting time in my flower farming career. I've just moved, lock, stock and barrel, my house, my home and my flower farm. So up until, we started in 2015 on a field scale in a part of Ireland called County Wicklow. Mm-hmm. West Wicklow, which is about kind of 40 miles outside Dublin. And a friend of ours who owned this lovely old manor house and had this walled garden, this Victorian garden, and let us use half it for growing flowers. So we did that from 2015 up until when the property was sold in 2020. So that was a real kind of wham. It came on top of the pandemic. We suddenly had to kind of look for a different way to grow our flowers. During that time, we'd also had bought, before that, a little bit before that, we bought this old, very old farmhouse down in County Leash. So County Leash, for anybody who doesn't know Ireland, is like if you got a pin, you stuck it in the middle of Ireland. It's pretty much for County Leash. It's just right in the Midlands. And it's lovely. It's actually kind of like a really kind of forgotten part of Ireland. So many people head to the coastline, whereas Leash is very much Midlands. But as a result, it's actually very unspoiled, very pastoral, very beautiful, very rural. And we bought this old farmhouse on nearly 5 acres. Really kind of wouldn't say ruins, but needed a massive amount of work done to it. But I always remember we bought it. I remember getting out of the car and putting my foot on the ground. And it had been a very wet spring. And I thought, oh, this soil is just lovely. Because it wasn't soggy. It wasn't squishy. I thought, okay, wow, such a good vibe of this. And we spent a long number of years slowly restoring the farmhouse. And we finally moved down. Well, we moved down to Leash into a rented house for a couple of months. And we finally moved into our little farmhouse 2 months ago.
Oh,
so we have 5 acres to land to kind of, you know, make our own.
And have you just got massively stuck in?
Yeah, we have. Well, it's funny, we have got massively stuck in. First of all, we had to, because a lot of the plants we were bringing down with us, we just had to get them in the ground. And actually, we were trying desperately to get a mini digger in to prepare the soil and stuff and get this area next to the house as our first primary area of planting, trying to get that cleared from last autumn. And we just couldn't get a driver in to clear anything away. Mm-hmm. So we garden organically, so we wouldn't use any weed killers or anything. So what we would typically do to get an area clear is we would get a mini digger in just to scrape very gently the vegetation off the soil, and then we would cover it with black plastic and leave it for several months and then rotate it. But we couldn't get a mini digger in. Finally, we got this really nice guy to do a really basic bit of work around the house in kind of early March. And I was just so desperate at that point. I actually went out with a pickaxe into because it's very stony just around the house, and literally just, if you saw photographs of me, I was there with this just mounds of plants, desperately getting them into the ground. Now, luckily, it's almost like we made this kind of gravel garden in the interim while we were waiting for the rest of the ground to be cleared. So we planted just loads of stuff like verbascums and foxgloves and achilleas. And we've just really, and it's our kind of our first start. And we've also propagated, obviously, an amazing amount of stuff, which we're continuing to do as well. And we're just in the process again, this site rotated the next couple of weeks now, just to get stuff in the ground.
All the hard work begins.
Absolutely, yeah, the slog, yeah.
But you've done it once, you can do it again.
Yeah, and look, you know, funny enough, we did it on our own farm, and we've also done it on a consulting level. So when the pandemic hit, we also, I've been working as a consultant for this lovely old historic garden called Kilruddery, the other side of Wicklow. And I've been helping them out with establishing their cut flower project there. And then when the pandemic hit, pretty much obviously everything closed down. Nobody was allowed to go anywhere. They were right in the process of getting this huge big border planted up in this wall garden of theirs, this 120 metre long border. All the nurseries were closed. You couldn't buy any plants anyway. What we did have was a load of seed and this amazing old Victorian pit house, like a glass house. So I spent the first 4 months of the pandemic sitting in this amazing pit house, just sowing thousands and thousands and thousands of plants from seed. And we planted them into their border last year, the 2020, then again last year, the whole length of the border. So it was a really kind of fascinating thing to do on that scale. You're just massively propagating. And literally, when I say like any particular species, you would have been, you know, propagating probably 500-600 of that.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Huge big stretches of it into the border, which is really exciting to do. It's just such fun and kind of, you know.
It doesn't sound like a bad way to start the pandemic off.
It was very blissful, actually, because it was so tranquil. There was no public there. The gardens were closed. It was this amazing privilege, really, that you were in a situation where you were seeing this historic garden that's normally open to the public and so busy, and really you were essentially there by yourself bar a few people, which was, it was an amazing, yeah, it was a privilege, and it was really interesting thing to do on that scale. And I love propagating. I said to you when we were talking earlier on, I just, propagating is my thing. I have this big itch to propagate plants all the time. I just love it.
So you said you started your first garden in 2015, but I'm guessing that's not been your first sort of foray into gardening. You strike me as somebody who's been doing it for a while.
I have. I've been doing it. I mean, I've always loved gardening since I was a small child. I've loved gardening. I've always loved it. Actually, funny, I've never considered it as a career. I went off and did the most unlikely of things. I studied philosophy and classical civilization in Trinity College.
Oh, wow.
Got a degree there. Very useful degree. So, very employable. And then I worked in the world of fine art for in Dublin for several years. I worked in various art galleries and museums. And funny enough, I was working in the Ireland's kind of National Museum in Kilmainham. This beautiful, again, old historic property. I was looking out at the windows at the gardeners working on the formal gardens there. And at this point, it would have been in my kind of mid-20s. And I just thought, God, I just do not want to be indoors. I want to be outdoors. So I decided to go back and study in the National Botanic Gardens in Glasnevin as a student there in horticulture. And I spent 3 years there studying amenity horticulture, which was fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah, back to the classroom. It was really kind of like suddenly back, you know, being scolded if you were late and, you know, getting detention if you were naughty. And then I worked in the field of garden design. I also started working as a garden writer. So, so kind of gradually, I've done a lot of different things. I think like most gardeners, you know, those interests stretch across different fields, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the cut flower thing was something, I just always loved growing cut flowers. But in terms of actually growing on a proper scale, I suppose, yeah, I really, my eureka moment there was I actually saw two other flower growers in Ireland. I went down to write about them for the Irish Times for my column. So I write a weekly gardening column in the Irish Times since 2011. And a friend suggested, listen, go down and see these people. They're growing flowers. And I thought, they're growing flowers. He said, yeah, they have a flower farm. And I thought, what's a flower farm? You know, flower farming back in 2011 really wasn't a thing. And to me, it was just like, what are they doing? And I went down and all the Beatties, they live in this place in Leitrim. And yeah, I was just kind of really blown away by what they were doing and just kind of hit all the buttons for me in terms of what I love. You know, I love just that sense of, you know, being able to grow your own beauty, grow your own ingredients like a chef, you know, or you're like a dressmaker, be able to grow your own fabric. You know, it was just this magical thing. And I thought, wow, that's what I want to do. And I started off very gradually in my own garden. And then, as I say, at a certain point, you realize you don't have enough space. You need more room. And that was when we started
every
growing
every gardener's problem.
It's true. Yeah.
So the episode today, what we wanted to focus on was propagating. You said you've got an itch to propagate. I like the sound of that kind of an itch, because I have to be honest, the only thing I have ever successfully propagated is a sedum.
Seriously?
Yes, I am not successful at propagating, so we want to know all
okay.
of your tips.
I think I'm going to correct you on that technically, Nicole.
Do you reckon I propagated something else?
Because you divide your dahlias and that...
Yeah, that's propagation.
It's propagation.
Oh, I suppose.
Yeah. Yes.
Point that out.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you
Don't
that.
Don't be
I'll
so hard on yourself.
So like propagation, there's lots of different ways to propagate. It's propagation by seed, by division, and, you know, by cuttings, and all of them are magical in their own way. And yeah, I think for me, it's like I do floral workshops, and one of the things I really like to do is to get participants to learn the art of propagation, because to me it's just the key to this universe. It's like opening a door into this world of possibilities. And you will never ever be able to buy in a garden center or even in a specialist nursery the range of plants that you can grow yourself, and to be able to do that is, as I say, it's like being a chef learning how to cook or something. It's magical and so empowering, and it's so actually, it's also at the core of gardening, in terms of just the sheer magic of gardening, like nursing something into life, you know. So, and you can grow so much stuff. So this is the other thing. As a flower farmer, you know, you need to be able to have several hundred of a particular plant. Like having two or three of it isn't going to be enough if you're going to be doing a wedding where you need so many stems. So like, yeah, growing stuff from seed to me is one of the things I always do in the workshops. Have you ever tried growing things from seed?
Oh yeah, we grow from seed all the time. It's
but
the
we
propagating
don't,
bit.
We don't
well, that's propagating.
Do...
Is that technically propagating?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
That's at the heart of propagation, yeah. So that's completely propagation. So when you say you can't propagate, do you mean propagate from cuttings?
Yeah, I mean from something that's not a seed. So we go from seed, like, as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
But then it's those, like you say, to be able to grow, you know, duplicate some of the biggest stuff that doesn't necessarily grow as well from seed.
So some stuff is... So I think you're talking about from cuttings. So cuttings... But this time of year, this is a wonderful time of the year to take cuttings. So for anybody who doesn't know what cuttings are, you take a small section of the plant, ideally a kind of very young, healthy part of the plant. At this time of the year, it would be softwood cuttings, which would be the kind of soft tips of shrubs, mm-hmm. or it would be like herbaceous cuttings. So the for example, dahlias. You can take cuttings, you can grow dahlias very easily from cuttings taken at this time of year. You really, it's just about being well prepared. Select the right material, make sure it's healthy, disease-free, collect it into a bag, for example, put a little bit dash of water in the bag and use a sharp knife, and then mm-hmm. you collect your cutting material, and I find it actually magical what happens. You take this little part of this plant. At this time of year, it would typically be about maybe 4 to 6 inches long, so kind mm-hmm. of softwood or herbaceous. You strip the lower leaves off it, you leave a few of the top leaves, but you nip the very soft tip of the plant out, because that's going to be prone to disease. And then you make sure the base of the cutting is just below, this sounds very technical, just below the nodes of the leaves. That's just where the leaves come out. So just below that, that's where all the hormones of the plant are rooted. And the most amazing thing is you then place this cutting up to its kind of shoulder, so 2/3 of it into a kind of gritty mix of compost and sand. The trick is to cover it with a plastic bag or a little freezer bag and seal mm-hmm. A rubber band around it, and then put
maybe
it somewhere.
That's where I'm going wrong.
Yes, that's really important. You're locking in humidity, you're locking in heat, and if you have a little heat propagator, that's absolutely brilliant for cuttings as well, because bottom heat is fantastic for getting them to shoot little roots. And then you put it somewhere where it's warm but not hot, and where it's not in direct sunshine, and then you wait. And at this time of year, you can actually propagate stuff from softwood cuttings or from herbaceous cuttings in a matter of 4 to 6 weeks. And the most amazing thing is the plant does this incredible thing where it sends all its energy and its hormones down to the wound where it's just been cut, and it desperately tries to live, and it actually grows new roots. And the other thing I would say to you as well, if you fail with cuttings, it's everybody fails with cuttings sometimes. You're never going to get 100% success rate with cuttings, but you know, 50 to 80% is fantastic. And all through this summer you can be taking cuttings of, and it's a wonderful way as well. For example, let's say you're in a friend's garden and you see a dahlia and think, ooh, I love that dahlia. And you don't know the name of the dahlia. Possibly it's a very rare dahlia. Maybe it's not for sale. You can just take a cutting of that from the soft, kind of, you know, juicy growth of it at the moment, and do what I've just told you to do. And you can propagate a plant for free of a variety of the
possibility.
Really?
Absolutely, from the plant itself?
Yeah, so people often nip out the tips of dahlias this time of year to get them to bush out. You know, you nip it out to...
Yeah. I'm just about to do that myself.
Yeah, so keep those things you've nipped out and take the very soft, absolute tip of them off them. But the rest of them, just stick them around the edge of a 3-litre pot, the gritty mix, and cover them over. Make sure that the compost is damp, and then cover it over the plastic bag, seal it. So an upturned plastic bag, and then seal it with an elastic band and leave it for a little while, and you'll be amazed.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I thought you could only propagate dahlias from the tubers.
No, and actually, I interviewed this master dahlia grower. So he's one of these competitive dahlia growers, you know, like an mm-hmm. incredible guy. But you know, they have these little discs where they actually measure the size and dimension
of
each.
Oh, I've seen those.
Like serious growers. But they, those
Show
guys,
growers.
Yeah, they're proper, like, old style competitive growers. Like, and he also is a dahlia judge. But they would never propagate their dahlias from division. They always propagate them from cuttings. They would actually discard their tubers most of the tubers every year after using them as mother stock. So they get those tubers, they would put them on a say a shallow tray covered with a little bit of compost and get them to generate out all this lovely soft new growth in spring. And then they would use those cuttings to grow new dahlias. And those dahlias would be in flower by kind of, you know, mid to late summer.
Because I thought when they did that, they kind of used a sharp knife to nip off a little bit of the tuber with it.
They do that as well.
It from the soft end.
Yeah, I think that's called like a heel cutting. And you can do that, and that increases your chances of that cutting. But you don't have to do that. You can just literally take a little bit of a cutting off the plant. And actually, from a cut flower point of view, you'll often see people saying, you know what, don't have too many growing shoots on a dahlia plant because you get a lot of thin, skinny growth.
Yeah.
And they tell you to remove some of the shoots, you know, in mm-hmm. spring to get nice strong growth. So those shoots that you're removing, you can just use those for cuttings. I mean, it's miraculous, isn't it? I think the plant world is just amazing what it can do. It's like the loaves and the fishes. It just keeps on finding ways to grow, you know. It's desperate to grow, which is kind of magical.
It always amazes me to grow anything. So the fact that you can cut something and it still grows.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you wouldn't get to grow a human that way, would you? Like, imagine we just cut off our leg and stuck it somewhere.
Yeah, and make another Nicole.
Yeah, we're not so good at that.
I don't think the world would know what would hit it, to be honest. But
cuttings are a great way to grow your garden. So my grandmother, she has an amazing garden. She grows on a third of an acre. And I was there recently doing some labour for her. I am her unpaid. Well, she pays me in wine, so paid labourer. And we were like tending to her shrub bed. It's like a circular bed full of heathers and like bushes and shrubs. And then she pointed at one of them and she said, oh, my friend so-and-so gave me a cutting of that 30 years ago.
Absolutely.
It was 5 centimetres big. And now it's like, well, it's not taller than me, but if I curled up in a ball, it would be bigger than me. It's like a very large, glorious, like lime green shrub. Couldn't tell you the name of it.
That's magical.
And I thought that was amazing. Yeah. So,
I mean, it is. And that's the thing about plants. If you look at, like, that generation always grew everything from cuttings. There weren't garden mm-hmm. centres in their day. What garden centres there were a different thing to what they are now. And people were just much more in tune with that. That's what they grew up with. And also, I just think the stories of plants, how they hopped from garden to garden that way, is such a magical thing. It's like this mm-hmm. kind of genetic history. Like, you know, plants have travelled across continents, you know, in shoved as cuttings into people's pockets and wrapped in, you know, plastic bags to keep them safe and stuff. You know, it's amazing to think where they travel, you know.
I actually did that coming back from my granny's. She has a flowering house plant, Streptocarpus.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
She had this beautiful, it was like a peach one that one of her friend propagates. And when she was eating, I snipped half a leaf and it came home with me. Don't tell the government that I flew on a plane with plant material. But it came home in my pocket in a bit of cling film, and I've now got it in soil and I'm hoping for roots.
Oh, very good. So you're going to grow it from, are you going to grow it from leaf, like pin the leaf down and get it to grow that way? Very good.
That's what
attempting. Excellent.
I don't have great faith, but I thought worth a try.
Now you're making me think I've done other propagating, because I've definitely done that with the house plants.
Yeah.
Ah,
yeah, that's
okay.
I mean, all propagating means that you basically grow a plant from some part of the plant. It might be the seed, it might be the root, it might be the leaf, it might be the stem. You know,
yeah, because I've got one of those, I can't say its Latin name, but it's
you got fanula, you can definitely say the Latin.
Is it called something like Pilea pepperina?
Yes.
Round,
it's very
tiny,
trendy
houseplant.
Yeah.
And they shoot up little plants.
That's
around
right.
the edges. So every now and again, I have to take it out of the pot and take off its babies and make new plants with those.
Yeah.
And I've got a spotted begonia that I've done from leaves. So maybe I'm better at this than I thought I was.
Well, that's the thing about it. Also, like, I find even like in terms of when you're growing, for example, like one thing I love to do is to save seed, for example. And again, it's another thing that I think people have just lost that art of saving seed. I'm just amazed by how much we let go to waste in that way, particularly when the pandemic again really showed how vulnerable that supply chain is. You know, how much of us remember the early days of the pandemic trying to find seed or get seed sent. And yet, like, you go around your average garden in late summer, early autumn, and it's just brimming with fresh seed. I spent a huge amount of my time, God, like from about late July till about, let's say, November, every piece of clothing I wear is just filled with seed. I literally am shoving kind of pods and stuff into pockets and taking it out and desperately labeling it later on and trying to remember what it is. But it's, you know, I was out there this morning and I was pricking out seedlings of Nicotiana that I saved from a friend's garden you know, helichrysums that I saved from my own garden. You know, just again, this magical way to keep stuff going. And it's one thing that we used to do with our brides before the pandemic kicked, was we would always try and send, once we had gardens, a little packet of seed, maybe something like Amai, that they would have had mm-hmm. in their bouquet. So it was a nice way for them to carry it on, you know. So
that is lovely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this again, and again, it's a story of plants, how they travel around the world and around different gardens.
Mm-hmm. So you said at the beginning when we started talking that now is like an ideal time, were it, you know, we're recording this on the 31st of May, to take softwood cuttings.
Yeah.
So what kind of things fall into that category? Like, what's a good thing to get started with if you've never really done anything from a cutting before?
Yeah. So
what should we go and hunt for to propagate?
Well, hydrangeas would be a really good example. So hydrangeas are kind of, at this time, these beautiful, for anybody who doesn't know the hydrangea, this lovely kind of shrubby, kind of deciduous plants, with these lovely, typical kind of ball-like flowers, big pom-pom-like flowers. But and they're expensive to buy in a garden centre, you know, and yet they are really easy to grow from cuttings. So they are something you could definitely grow from softwood cuttings at this time of year. Another example, like I said, would be dahlias. I would definitely be growing some dahlias from cuttings at this time of year. Another one would be like the woody salvias. Mm. So even, you know, any of the kind of woody ones, you know, people might, you know, like hot lips, for example, is the one that everybody knows, with the kind of blue, the red and white little flowers. They will root from a cutting in probably about 3 weeks at this time of year.
Oh, wow.
If you put them on a heated propagator, and they're just so quick. And also I would say, you know, kind of that those moments where you're just passing by a garden, or you're in a, you know, at a car park somewhere, you look in a shrub going, ooh, that's nice. I can imagine using that somewhere. Mm-hmm. I just spend my time just nicking cuttings there.
And
I wouldn't steal it from a garden, you know, private garden that asking somebody. But certainly, like if you're in a motorway garage and you're looking at like something, I don't know, like a Santalina or something, you think, okay, that would be actually really nice to grow a cutting from, be a nice background foliage filler. Just try it. You know, just try it and see where it takes you. And you know, it's just a fascinating experiment, and it'll build people's confidence. It's just such a joy. And it's such a thrill. When I have cuttings of roses, for example, that I took last year. People never think you're growing cuttings of roses, but roses grow really well from cutting. Wow. Now, technically, you have to only be doing it, some are protected by plant breeders' rights. Which is a horrible, I hate the plant breeders' rights, but that's only if you're going to commercially reproduce them. Do you know what I mean? So for a private point, as I understand it, from a private point of view, you can take cuttings of anything. But yeah, so like, it's just experiment. I've young rose plants out there just popping out roots now that I took cuttings of last autumn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
The other one I often do, if I see big like wild rosemary bushes, I always take quite a large number of those, because I put rosemary in every dish apparently. But I normally propagate them in water and then pop them up. I find they do well.
And it's a lovely thing. I use rosemary for buttonholes, because rosemary symbolizes remembrance, you know? So you think, okay, rosemary for remembrance in somebody's wedding day. It's just a lovely little kind of, you know, and also on a more practical level, rosemary is really hard at wearing and resistant on a hot day. So if you're looking for a foliage plant for a buttonhole that will, you know, take a bit of abuse and battering, then rosemary is very good.
And herbs would be good then to propagate, because they've got a lot of, they're kind of mostly softwood, aren't they? So things like lavender,
absolutely. Mint, you could do, I mean, mint is so easy to propagate anyway,
and
if you want to
like
do
a crazy mad thing, it propagates itself.
It does. It's very true.
What about sage? Last year I used quite a bit of sage in things that I was arranging. I stopped though after my husband said one of my bouquets smelled like a roast dinner.
I can imagine. Actually, I love the smell of sage. Sage can be a bit wilty, is the only thing. It can be it's a tricky one. So like, I think anybody, when you're arranging flowers, you're really always experimenting to find out which are the varieties and that will give you a long vase life, which are the ones that will really withstand sitting in a vase in a hot room, or, you know, being held in a bouquet on a hot, you know, summer's day by a bride. So you're always testing out the stuff that really works and trying it.
Yeah, sage is not your friend with that. I find it's better in like an arrangement, if it's sitting on a table, rather than being out of water, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly, yeah, that's true.
Because the other one I love, and I hear it propagates well in water, is basil. But I can't get basil to live nicely in a bouquet. It's not my friend.
No. And it's funny, if I see basil, I would never use basil in a bouquet. Actually, God, I think that would smell like a kind of a salad, wouldn't it? If you
for a pizza, to me.
Unnerving. No, I can't imagine that. I've never tried that in a bouquet, and I wouldn't.
But it flowers so prettily, doesn't it? And
it
I always think it looks so nice.
It does.
And then, you know, an hour later, and it's like,
it's wilty. Yeah. No, it's definitely about kind of honing. I mean, I think that's, again, the thing about flower growing, isn't it? It's about constantly editing. And, you know, we're like kind of kids in a candy store at the beginning. We're just, everything looks beautiful. We want everything. And then what you learn to do is to edit down in terms of the most floriferous varieties, the most vigorous ones, the ones with a good vase life, the ones with a good length of stem. And also trying to think of it a bit like ingredients again. How do they go together? And, you know, which are the ones that flower over a very long period of time will just keep on being really productive. And that's something I would definitely say to people as well, is I think a lot of the focus when you first start growing cultiflowers is on annuals, which we're all, like, they are beautiful and they're so productive. But if you compare those to perennials, so perennials obviously live for a number of years, whereas annuals only live for 1 year. But perennials just keep giving back and giving back and giving back. All the same amount of work that you put into them as you put into annuals, but you keep getting that back over years and years. So I would definitely be, I'm sowing a lot of perennials at the moment, and that's something I really recommend to people. Shrubby material and perennials are the way to go, even from a sustainability point of view, you know. Less, you're not using as much compost, you're not using as much labour. There just isn't that same embedded hard work and time.
And easier to propagate as well, I imagine.
Actually, no, that's the one thing I would say. I'd say perennials are actually a little bit trickier to propagate. Okay. They can be slower to germinate, and some of them can be really tricky. Funny enough, have you ever used Gelato? Really, really good seed supplier.
I have not heard of them.
I have to go and look at Gelato. Okay, so anybody who really wants really interesting perennial varieties, Gelato, so Gelitto. They have a brilliant online app. Yeah, it's really good. Now, it's very much aimed at, they're not going to pander to amateurs, but like that, in terms of their, when you read their instructions, they have 20 different types of germinating instructions, depending on, so they bracketed all their perennials into 20 different types of ways they need to be germinated. And some of them are very specific. I was looking at it today, I was thinking, like, one of them was, okay, this, I think it was penstemon, needs to be kept cold around about below 5 degrees centigrade and moist, and you put it in a bag in the fridge with sand. So some of that stuff is really tricky, but against that there are lots of stuff that's really easy. So, like, you know, for example, I'm growing Veronica at the moment for seed. So the Veronica, is it Longifolia? I think it's Longifolia. It's a really lovely perennial, this kind of spires of flowers, and you can get it in shades of white and pink and blue, and it's a lovely little detail to add to a bouquet. Really beautiful and really long-lived perennial. And Echinaceas, another fantastic, you know, really beautiful cut flower. Achilleas, fantastic cut flower, really brilliant filler. There's so many really good perennials out there, and the great thing about them as well is then you can just keep on dividing them and either giving them to friends or selling them at a local, you know, if you're going to be selling in market, you can sell your plants with your flowers. There's lots of possibilities.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
How long do things generally take to get to maturity? Because I did take some hydrangea cuttings last summer.
Yeah.
And actually put them into vermiculite, and that worked really well. And I've got them potted up. But I'm looking at them and they're only sort of yay high. And I think to myself, I think you're going to be a bush by the time I'm, you know.
Oh, no. Now, in fairness to hydrangeas, they're fast growing. That's the problem with shrubby material. And that's the thrill of annuals for everybody, is that you get that real quick sugary hit, don't you? You straight off get your flowers within a few months of sowing. Whereas actually, the one thing all experienced flower growers or farmers would tell people starting off is get the shrubby stuff in at the beginning, because that is slower to grow, but that just keeps repaying you for years and years. So your hydrangea will probably be in flower maybe 3 or 4 years. It will take a time to bulk up, but then it will just exponentially be more and more productive. You know, some shrubby stuff grows quicker than others, but hydrangeas are pretty fast growing, you know. And for example, I took cuttings of Physocarpus. I don't know if you know Physocarpus.
Oh, I love that. I've got Diablo in my garden.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I took cuttings of that last year. Lovely little young plants already from that, from just cuttings just shoved into a pot. Yeah, so lots of different types of Physocarpus out there. Another one I'm looking for, which is supposed to be very good, is one called, I hope I pronounce this correctly, Diervilla, which I've never heard of before, but it's D-I-E-R-V-I-L-L-A, and that is supposed to be a fantastic, really resilient, productive cut foliage plant. Lots of different varieties again, so Diervilla. And again, I'm going to look for that plant in a garden centre this summer, well, I have been looking, and once I get it, I'm just going to take cuttings of it. So I'm just going to use it as a mother stock, as you know, to produce lots of cuttings from it. And I know I won't get much material for the first maybe 3 years, but I'm okay with that. I just want to get a lot of young plants in the ground, know that down the line I'll have plenty.
Oh, it's apparently a kind of a honeysuckle. I just googled it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Wow, I love a bit of honeysuckle. It's so pretty, isn't it? It smells so good as well.
I don't think this is really grown for, it does have little pretty yellow flowers, but it's really much more of a foliage, so it's a filler plant. And that's the other big thing about when you start growing flowers for sale or for yourself is we all tend to focus on the really big showy stuff. Like we get totally seduced by the big blousy dahlias and the roses and the real kind of eye candy. And then over time you realize, actually, you know what, you need the fillers. The fillers are really important.
You never have enough foliage the bulk. Or fillers
Yeah. So important. And that's something I've really learned over the years, is to really concentrate on that stuff. Yeah.
So what's your favorite filler to propagate then?
Actually, I think definitely would be Achillea millefolium. So there's two varieties of that. Well, I say like their name varieties, but they're both very mixed. So the summer pastels and the summer berries, and they're just both really useful, versatile fillers. They keep going throughout the summer months. They're fantastic for bouquets. They're fantastic for weddings. They're just so useful. And again, you can divide them really easily by division, you know, and then just propagate lots of young plants off them. And they are very easy to grow from seed as well.
Oh, so you dig them up and then cut the root?
Yeah, so you would just literally dig them up.
You could do that with an Achillea.
Yeah, you could do that with a God, you can. Absolutely. I tell you what, when I brought my Achilleas down to here to our house in Leash, we had nowhere to put them. And I was thinking, oh my God, this is just ridiculous. I have nowhere to put this. We have so many of them. And the digger we'd got in at that point left this big mound of waste soil just to one side of where we were excavating somewhere else. And I was so desperate, I thought, you know what, feck it. These are just going in here. So I sliced them up into kind of little small clumps, stuck them into this big mound of soil, and just kept them watered. And I now have this very handsome mound of Achillea waiting to be transplanted into its permanent place. But yeah, they're really easy front division. So they have kind of more fibrous roots, like lots of little fine, small roots. And and again, I would imagine you could definitely easily grow Achillea from cuttings as well, from herbaceous cuttings.
We have previous guests, Gemma from Green Rabbit Flowers. I saw on her Instagram, she's got a big bed of Achillea that she sowed all from seed. And what she did was go through and label the colours that she loved the most. And she also the colour she hated. So she took out all the less desirable colours and divided the ones she liked. So now she's got a mix that's more to her sort of colour palette.
That's a really good idea. Really good. Yeah, because you get these lovely kind of soft peachy apricot shades, which are just, again, like if you're doing a lot of wedding work, they're just really invaluable. Whereas you know, some of the brighter shades are good for, say, bouquets that you're sending to like to individual, like for gifts, but they wouldn't really be so much weddingy. Do you know what I mean? So there's a kind of like this two strands of, and I'm not saying that all wedding work isn't color is all kind of peachy apricot, but there's a lot of that goes on, and you do need your filler material for that. So yeah, I wouldn't be without Achillea, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's a really good idea about labeling them like that.
A friend, hi Sophie if you're listening, gave me a clump of an obedient plant which makes a good cut flower.
Oh yeah,
have you ever grown that?
Yes, I was going
to ask you how you pronounce the Latin name.
I'm giving it a go there. I'm probably wrong.
Physostigia virginatum or something like that. I mean, it's not as catchy as obedient plant, is it? And I was mean to that thing. I didn't plant it up as quickly as I should have. I just kind of popped it in the corner of the garden, and it's all started to come to life. So I desperately need to get it in the ground, but it's a massive old clump. And I think that with some of these perennials, they're really hard to kill as well, aren't they?
Actually, the best are hard to kill. That's very true. No, they are. It's funny because, you know, and again, that's great. You want that resilience. You want to have those plants that you can come back to, and they're kind of no fuss plants that you just think, okay, that's there. I know that's there. I don't have to kind of cosset it along. And really, I have less and less time for cosseting stuff along. I think, you know, life's too short. There's too many good, really garden-worthy cut flower varieties out there. And again, it's about, I think people, we're all seduced by those Instagram images that kind of flash up on our screens. And it kind of, in one way, it's brilliant because it informs us so much. But in another level, it really makes us all want the same thing. And our gardens aren't the same. We have all different growing conditions, you know, wet to dry, hot to cool. And really, one of the great lessons of gardening and of cut flower growing is to pick the varieties that do well in the growing conditions that you can give them. So if you are gardening or growing on a cold, wet soil, there's absolutely no point in trying to grow a kind of sun lover that needs sharp drainage. It's always going to struggle and sulk, and you're going to get frustrated. So, you know, pick the stuff that really suits your growing conditions. And
I suppose that's why propagating is a good idea, isn't it? Because if it's growing well there already,
absolutely,
why not grow more of it?
Yeah, so go and have a little look around your neighbour's gardens and your you know, friends and family's gardens nearby, and the stuff that really is doing well, that's a very good sign. Because even in terms of hardiness, for example, if you're growing in a garden that's a cold one, maybe prone to kind of, you know, early, you know, to late spring frost or early autumn frost, really good to get a sense of what copes with those conditions by looking at what is around you. And the other thing I would say definitely is to go to garden centres and have a little mooch around the place. And you know, because it's funny, we were talking about geums earlier on, and you know, we grow geums for our weddings. Actually, used them in a wedding last week, and they were lovely going through a Mai Tai, which is that really beautiful one.
Oh, I love that one.
Such a gorgeous one, yeah. But I was in a garden centre about 2 weeks ago for a piece I was doing for a magazine, and there was this amazing geum which I'd never heard of before, which I can't, its name's like, it's got this dreadful name. It's like Pink Petticoats Princess.
Oh,
Park.
Yes, that's the one. Pink Petticoats, I saw that. So yeah. Really.
That
definitely
is amazing.
Petticoats, the right name for it, but yeah. It's a bit
girly, isn't it? But it, but it's like, when you compare it to Mai Tai, it's got higher, taller stems. It's got more upright flowers. It's also more long flowering, I think, even than Mai Tai. And it's got a slightly more usable peachy shade, kind of more soft, kind of pinky gold, and really productive. So I'm looking at that going, wow. So, you know, there's all these great new plant introductions coming out the whole time. Great plant breeders out there doing really amazing things. So it's about keeping your eye out, again, just
and
constantly
can you,
being
can
honest.
You, how would you propagate a geum?
So a geum would definitely be by division, you know.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah. So a geum by division, if you get a really sharp kind of knife and cut it up into small sections, ideally the best time to do that would probably be with a geum would probably be in autumn. And if you have a polytunnel or a glasshouse, that's a fantastic way of giving that little extra boost of protection and kind of, you know, keeping them kind of a little bit cosseted. And just pot them onto small individual pots. And yeah, it's like the loaves and the fishes. I mean, this is another great tip, actually. In kind of late summer, when a lot of garden centres want to get rid of their stock, or they have plants that have been there for a while and they're a bit pot-bound, a bit too big, they're ripe for division. You know, you've got this wonderful, big, healthy mother stock again. It's already desperate to be, you know, potted on. And you just, just divide it up.
Did
yeah,
that
fantastic.
With a really sad-looking perennial cornflower. It was like a white one as opposed to the traditional blue.
Oh, very good.
It was
white
and purple. And
yeah.
B&Q,
oh, yeah, I remember when you did that.
Yeah, B&Q had like basically murdered it. It was like 50p in the discount section.
Oh, and, it's the saddest thing.
Yeah, it turned into like six plants, which got handed out. And it's so lovely because it's so different to the normal, perennial cornflower. That's like that classic blue colour. So
yeah, and you can find these little gems in places like kind of discounted, like new supermarkets, and you'd be quite surprised what you can find there. Like, and as you say, often kind of discounted down because they just want to get rid of it, or they've almost killed
it. I call it
death row. Well, it's awful, isn't it? Oh, you know, you go in there and you just think, oh, just give me a watering can, please. They're in pain. Yeah. I can't bear to look at them like that, you know.
I picked up a lot of potted bulbs this year, so I've been trying to
very good. Yeah.
Expand my muscari collection, and they're expensive.
Yeah.
And I just hit that garden centre at the right time and managed to get myself a few bulbs off death row.
Well, that's the thing, and there's so much, I mean, because the thing about it is the modern garden centre is really like a supermarket. They're just this fast rotation of stock. Mm-hmm. They want it off the shelves the minute it looks bad. They want it gone. And if you can get in there at the right time and get these things, it's really good value. Excellent value. Not as good value as cuttings or cedar, for, you know what I mean, but still really good value.
Or stealing from motorway car parks.
See, I feel like what I'm missing from my life is, like, I guess like a gardening club. I feel like those have kind of died out a little bit. I went to my granny's gardening club when I was visiting her. But like among my generation, I guess we're kind of missing that. Because I would love to have more people in my life who were my age, who I could be like, please let me have a cutting of that plant. And like, I've got spare cuttings of this, and like handing things around.
I think that's why I love the allotment.
Yeah.
That's where you
because there's a
community.
Lot of that happens. That's where I got my sedum from. One of the ladies at the end, she said to me, I don't want this sedum anymore. Do you want it? And then the next thing I knew, there was a whacking great clump at the end of my plot.
Fantastic.
Which we hacked up into about 15 pieces. And now my garden is just becoming like a heaven for sedum.
Yeah.
And then...
But there was online as well, isn't there? Wasn't there online clubs during... Like, there was a lot of online kind of gardening virtual clubs, particularly during the beginning months of the pandemic, weren't there? Mm. When people kind of, you know...
Well, we kind
I know it's not the same thing.
Have our own, I guess. We have a Facebook group that I know lots of the listeners are part of. But I feel like maybe I might put a little thing on there being like, is there anyone in my local area? Do you want to meet for a cup of tea and be my like gardening friend so that I can come around and steal your plants? Basically, that's what I want.
Quietly nick a few things. I mean, the garden clubs are still big in Ireland. Yeah, there would be definitely an older age profile. And they definitely suffered again during the pandemic because obviously those monthly meetings where people would have come and there would have been talks and people would have swapped plants, that all stopped dead for like, you know, nearly 2 years, and it's only really coming back now, which has been very tough.
I might start like a gardening club for people my age around here, but also serve like cocktails.
That's maybe. It, exactly. Oh, yeah. Mojitos and a dahlia on the side. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, you could make the mojitos with the mint you've propagated.
That's it.
I love that. Yeah.
Sounds good.
I'm sure you could make up a little rosemary number.
When
I was at Chelsea last week, there was a lady making these botanical cocktails with a spirit that she'd made, that they make in Scotland. She put pine into it.
Ooh.
No.
Was that very strong?
You say that, but it was delicious.
Okay, yeah.
It was, I didn't think I would like something with pine in it, but it was...
You'd imagine it'd be very strong, kind of resinous. Was it like...
It kind of was, but it was like rosemary-esque kind of flavour. I really like that. Yeah. And I'm not a drinker, but I could definitely start a gardening cocktail club if it had those.
Pine gives me toilet cleaner vibes.
This was the opposite of toilet cleaner. I'm gonna find out this recipe and we'll try it on you, Sarah.
Put it up on your Facebook group.
It'll be my first cocktail at my new cool kid gardening club.
if you're interested in joining, Sarah, you know what to do.
Send me a DM. I have one more question before I use it from my brain. So you know your roses you've propagated, how long do you think it'll take for them to come to a...
I think probably realistically you're probably talking probably about, I would say, about 3 to 4 years. I mean, again, with roses you shouldn't really pick them when they're very young, because it kind of, you're using up, you know, you shouldn't even let them flower even when they're very young. You should let the plant put all its energy into kind of, you know, root and leaf production. And same with peonies, you know, they tell you with peonies that you should kind of literally, which just sounds so brutal, nip the flower heads, buds off as they develop, because otherwise it's the plant is just exhausting a certain amount of its energy on something when you want it just to pour all its energy into production. But I kind of think that's kind of part of our problem actually as gardeners as well, and it's kind of part of our era. It's part of how we're instant gardeners, like that idea of patience. I mean, gardening teaches you, well, it forces you to learn patience, and like I think previous generations just accepted that, whereas we are of a generation or of generations that want more immediate results.
There's Instagram for
you know what I mean. And actually the great glory of gardening is it goes, you know what, you're not going to rush me here, you can just wait, sit
Mother
it out.
Mother Nature has other news for you.
You know when you're looking at a seed waiting for it to germinate, and it's like 1 week goes by and you're going, come on. And you're kind of poking and prodding around it, or you know, with cuttings, you're going, come on. I mean, to me, it's a really good lesson in life. It's quite humbling, but it's also quite magical. It's just something telling, you know what, this takes its time. It has a process. You just give it that time. And in the scale of things, it's very little for what the results it's going to bear. And you know, it's worth it in the end, you know. It's not kind of immediate gardening, like when you see these people going into a garden centre pouring, you know, several hundred euros on some plants. I spend my time now looking and going, oh my God. You know, you see somebody buying a foxglove and you're going, oh my God, I just propagated 200 of those from seed. That's outrageous. You paid a tenner for that plant, you know?
Yeah.
So before we move on to our last question, I have one last question about equipment for propagating. So we've mentioned having a plastic bag, like a freezer bag or something like that, when you're taking the cuttings.
Yeah.
Drop of water in it to kind of help with humidity. So I'm guessing that's what we want to do, stop it from drying out.
Yeah. So if you're not going to bring that cutting straight off, ideally the thing with cuttings is speed. But if you're going to be taking cuttings and you're in some other garden, what you don't want those cuttings to do is to dehydrate in the meantime. So you're going to use a sharp secateurs, a clean secateurs or sharp knife, take the cuttings and put them into a little plastic bag with a bit of water in it. Make sure you write down the name. It doesn't, obviously you don't necessarily always know the name, but just say, like, you know, Auntie Mary's beautiful pink shrub, something that you know what it is when you're looking in the middle of the winter going, what the hell is this thing? And so plastic bag. The other really important thing is to use a good seed and cuttings compost. The other really important thing, I think, and I think people don't use this enough, is a thing called vermiculite. Mm-hmm. Have you used vermiculite?
Yeah.
So I would always work a fine grade horticultural vermiculite into the compost, the top kind of 2 to 3 inches of it. It adds kind of porosity. It helps prevent disease. It also kind of helps. It's great for seeds as well. It just helps in so many ways with the kind of rooting or the germination process. And then I would, you know, like I described, you prepare my cuttings in that way and then put them around the edges of like a 3 liter black plastic pot. Mm-hmm. I put my upturned plastic bag over that. I seal it around the rim of the pot with a plastic rubber band to seal in moisture and heat. And if you have any kind of an electric propagator, like anything on a bottom heat, is hugely beneficial. It will really, really up the results. And then your last vital ingredient is patience. Just hanging on in there. Yeah.
One thing I noticed you didn't mention that I have to ask, because I know everyone will be wondering, but what about rooting hormone, a powder or a gel? Do you ever use that? Do you find it necessary?
I never use that. I mean, some people do. I never do, actually. I think I just have this aversion to using chemicals. I suppose I kind of feel it's generally not necessary, and I think there are times when rooting hormone will help, and it'll it's kind of a trickier species. It will possibly boost the results, but so often I just think it's unnecessary, and I just think, you know, the less of that the better. So I don't do that. And it works perfectly. You know, the plant, if you pick young, healthy, viable tissue, that plant is absolutely brimful of hormones already. You know, that's what allows it to send all those hormones down to where the wound is and to grow. New roots. So really, I kind of tend to not bother to intervene with them. You know, what nature can do best itself. Yeah.
And if there was one perennial that you could recommend sort of the most for cutting, for people to buy a mother plant and just, like, you know, rip it apart to get as many of them for their garden as possible, what would it be?
Gosh, because there's so many of them.
I know.
You're asking the poor lady to come up with one.
I just feel like one.
Well, I would definitely say Achillea. Like I mentioned before, also because you can dry Achillea, which is, you know, if you're using something like moonbeam, you can dry that.
Yes.
For basculums are probably not a good one for dividing. I would definitely think, you know, something like the more like Sanguisorbus, for example, are really good as again. Like really good for division. You get these lovely little kind of delicate bobbles of flowers on long slender stems. They're lovely for adding detail to an arrangement. Veronicas, again, fantastic as well. God, there's just so many, actually. It's kind of hard to... But I would say to people, I tell you one thing I absolutely love, and it's not your conventional flower, but I grew it from seed last year, and it is just the most amazingly productive plant. And it's a grass. It's called Pennisetum villosum cream falls. And it has the most beautiful, feathery, soft inflorescences. Like, we planted along the border in Kilruddy last year, and everybody who walked along just wanted to touch it. Young kids just spend their time just putting their hands out and stroking it. And it flowers from July right until the first harsh frost, and you get these beautiful, soft, glittering, feathery flowers that are wonderful in a cut flower arrangement and add a really contemporary feel to any arrangement. So grasses are a really good way of adding a kind of 21st century feel to conventional material. They kind of bring it into a different kind of, you know, scheme of things. But this one is just amazing. Now, it doesn't like a really cold garden, but it has overwintered, and I have it down here in Leash now, planted into clumps, and it's just you know, beginning to throw out its leaves again. So it's kind of more of a semi-evergreen deciduous grass, really, in cooler gardens.
Well, that is amazing.
Yeah, and like, it grew so fast. And again, Gelato, that place I told you about, the seed company, they sell the seed, and it is just amazing. Just so beautiful.
And that's one that's good for dividing the roots of.
Really easy to divide the roots of it. Absolutely. You could just carve. And also, each plant forms a really fat, big clump. From, like, we sowed it last spring, got into the border in June. By mid-July, we had big plants. By August, really big, fat clumps. Yeah, really. Like, each clump would probably have been about a foot more, foot and a half wide. Yeah. Yeah, really easy to grow.
A lot of bang for your buck with those ones. A lot of bang for your buck with those ones.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you look at what you'd be paying for that in a specialist nursery, you'd probably be paying, like, you know, €10 a plant. So, yeah. I don't know what that is in sterling. But, you know, they're expensive plants to buy and really easy to propagate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I would definitely try that one. Delphinium's another great one.
Well... Now I'm going to be just looking around everywhere, like, what can I propagate? I feel like you've opened up a whole new world to me.
Well, definitely,
propagating in a different way.
Well, do like Chiltern seeds and gelato. Chiltern, I'm sure you know Chiltern seeds.
We love Chilterns.
Yeah, so Chiltern are amazing. And then over here in Ireland, we have Seedaholic, which are really good. I think.
They post to us as well. We use them.
Yeah, and then gelato would be another one. And then, God, there's B&T seeds, which is a really kind of weird, obscure way of ordering online. But they do have really unusual varieties as well. So there's lots of lovely stuff out there. I think actually, you know, Florette, I'm sure you know Florette. She did a whole list of seed suppliers all around Europe and recently, just as a kind of resource for people. I think that's on her website as well.
I'm gonna hit you with our final question. No pressure. If there was one piece of advice you could give the people listening for the season to come, what would it be?
Yeah, I was thinking about this today. I mean, I was thinking, like, keep sowing is one, but then keep weeding, keep feeding. I would say three, which would be really greedy of me. One would be to invest in an oscillating hoe. So an oscillating hoe is this amazing piece of equipment that I would not be without. It is just the fastest, most efficient, most kind of useful way to keep down weeds in the plot.
So it's the same hoe as a stirrup hoe.
I think it is the same.
I've got an oscillating hoe. Yes, you were the one who got me onto it, Sarah.
Brilliant.
We've got the hoe.
And there's different widths of the hoe. So you have the really wide one, which actually you don't find useful. And then there's one that's like about a 4 to 5 inch width head. And then there's a really small little narrow one, which is like a 2 inch or 5 centimeter width head, which is brilliant for going in between fiddly bits. So one thing would definitely be to invest in a hoe. And the other thing would be to invest in some liquid seaweed feed. A really high quality one. Constantly use it throughout the season to keep plants productive, keep them drought proof, keep them flowering. We use it in dahlias all the time and on sweet pea and stuff like that. I would just get into the habit of and it's also brilliant for young seeds on a really really diluted level. So seaweed has amazing properties in terms of boosting germination rates, so if you use it really really diluted down on young seedlings, it actually helps them germinate and helps them to the root development really quickly. And then my last one would be save seed, people. Please take cuttings as well. Save seed and take cuttings, but save seed, this big treasure trove around us of material, and we're so oblivious to it. We walk through it and we don't realize what nature's offering us on a plate, you know, between cuttings and seeds. So just to have fun with it.
I saved sweet pea seeds from I did a big sweet pea wall, and then I gave them out as Christmas presents. So I made little stickers that said Sarah's
that's so
sweet
nice
peas. And when I went to visit my granny, she very proudly walked me over to her big trellis and she said, "These are Sarah's sweet peas." And she's even...
That's the heart of gardening, isn't it? That's what it's all about. You think, wow, that's, you know.
And I gave her a few packets and she gave them out at gardening club. And so then when I went to gardening club, everyone was like, "Is this Sarah? Sarah's sweet peas?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's me."
And then you started a journey that's going to go off, like, literally, if you did it like one of those diagrams, it would be kind of mathematically amazing. It's just stretching off in different directions. You know, your seed are going to be sent to somebody else, somebody else is going to save them, and on they go. And that's the nature of gardening, like, you know, down through the generations. It's a lovely thing.
I like it because that family tree of sweet peas is almost entirely influenced by this podcast. It's all like peachy tones and like pink tones. So it brings me joy to know that they probably think they're going to get like bright, you know, like some of the classic purple.
Yeah,
they think they're going to get the gaudy normal sweet peas, but actually they're going to get the Let's Grow Girls mix.
Like a Molly Rilston or something like that.
It's like peaches and slight light pinks and whites.
Oh yeah, Molly Rilston. What a good sweet pea that one is.
That's a yummy one. And champagne bubbles. That's another very nice one like that as well. Yeah, I love that. Again, those colours are so useful, you know.
We could do a whole another episode on sweet pea colours, but we're going to definitely overrun our time today if we start going down that rabbit hole. So where can the listeners find you if they'd like to follow your journey a little bit more?
At the moment, we're only on Instagram. We're getting our website redone at the moment. So the handle is at the Irish Flower Farmer. So at the Irish Flower Farmer. Yeah, you'll find
us
there.
And when you've got your website up and running, I'm sure you'll post on
I will do that. I will.
And am I right in thinking you've also got a little book there?
Oh, I brought out a book. Gosh, that's a long time ago. So in my work as a garden writer for the Irish Times, for about 2 or 3 years, I wrote about this wall garden, the Phoenix Park, a Victorian wall garden that they restored to full productivity. It was an amazing to follow it from the beginning and to see the gardeners there and, you know, everything from the cut flowers to the vegetables. So based on that, we were asked do a book about about food growing in Ireland, and we did a little book called From the Ground Up, where my husband Richard photographed it and I wrote about it, and we went around the country and we wrote about some very very different kinds of the food growers, from young children to really seasoned expert growers, people like Joy Lark, who you may know. And yeah, it was really interesting, and you know, it was kind of a fascinating insight. Actually, it gave me a load of skills for flower growing as well, because those worlds overlap so easily. Like the same skills you bring to vegetable growing are so similar to what you bring to cut flower growing. You know, exactly the same skills in terms of site preparation and, you know, mounting your crops and stuff. And it was a really good base again for my flower growing experience.
And even if the listeners aren't in Ireland, you can still get the Irish Times online, can't you? And find your articles on there.
Yeah, you can actually. Yeah, yeah, you can actually. Yeah.
I had a nice little read of your growing wisteria article.
Well, it's a funny thing. You write a column, a garden column, for so long. So I've been writing now for 11 years. So it becomes this kind of part of your life that you kind of every week you sit down and you write your 1,200 words, which is, it's great discipline. It's also a great research tool because you're like, oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Very helpful.
Oh, good.
But thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Nicole.
You've definitely inspired Sarah and I to get out there and steal from our neighbour's garden.
Dude, think of me every time. Think of me every time you steal a cutting from a car park somewhere.
You definitely will. Okay. But thank you so much. I hope we've inspired the listeners as well to get out there and propagate, and let us know if you ethically take something to propagate.
Go forth and propagate.
I'm not advocating theft.
No, never.
Thanks again.
Thank you very much. Thanks a million. Bye. Nice to talk to you both. Bye. Bye.
It's outro time.
Thank you so much for listening and for your support. We are loving this season so far.
And we hope you are too. If you love the episode as much as we love doing it, then we would be so grateful if you left us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You can also subscribe, and you can find us on Instagram for more of our adventures at Let's Grow Girls Podcast.
We're really grateful having you here, listening to all of our interviews with our amazing guests. And we hope that you carry on enjoying the rest of the season.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye. You sounded really far away when you said that. Were you sat back?
Yeah, because I didn't want to shout at our people, you know.